Well, hi everyone, happy Easter to you. Can we give it up one more time? We got several students involved. Way to go. One of our values as a church community is intergenerational worship, and we see that embodied today on Easter, and I'm so happy about it. If you are new with us, you and I, we have something in common. This is my first Easter service ever at Highway Community. I'm very excited. If you didn't get the memo, we are having a pancake brunch right after the service in the backyard here. And my kids asked us if we could have dessert after the pancakes. I said, pancakes are dessert. You guys are spoiled. And apparently, there's something called Meester Easter that's going to make an appearance. And this is my first time experiencing that. But let's get into it, shall we? The year is 2001. I'm a junior in high school. Please don't do the math there. I'm sitting in my bedroom surfing the web, which is something we used to do in the ancient days, and I hear a voice say, "You've got mail," which is something else that used to happen in those days. And I got an email from a friend in my former town. We both grew up very Christian, but as we start writing back and forth, I realize he's gotten pretty cynical about God, about the world, about people. And it sort of rocks me to the core because he quotes stats and philosophers, and I can't argue with the truth of it. And when I talk with him, I remember the pain and the heaviness of the world. Now, fast forward several years later, I'm a shift manager at a boutique craft coffee shop called Starbucks. Thank you. And I work with this guy who attends a charismatic church, and every morning he explodes into the store, and he lets everyone know how blessed he is. When customers pull out of the drive-thru, he yells out to them, "Jesus loves you." And so I pull him aside, and I tell him, "You know, we're sort of on the same team or whatever, but you can't say that to people. It's inappropriate, and it's annoying." And I had to distance myself from him because he drove our coworkers crazy. They would talk about their frustrations or pains, and he would try and convince them that everything is a blessing and it's all good all the time. So two extremes of people. And here's what's tricky. There is truth in both extremes. We live in a world of suffering. Last year, there were 656 mass shootings in America, and each one is heartbreaking. We're quickly approaching peak election season, which will be filled with vitriol and anger. Anybody raise a hand excited about this election season coming up? Right. Climate change continues to get worse, not better. Racial and gender injustices abound. All ages of people, there is a constant rising of anxiety and depression. You all know this. How about inflation? Every time I go to Safeway and the cashier tells me the total, I look back just to check and see if he accidentally scanned another customer's items too. Because it's insane. The news in Israel and Palestine is devastating. By the way, aren't you glad you came to this Easter joy-filled pep talk? Some of you are like, get to the good news and the pancakes, can we? These are real things. You and I know them. We feel them. This is our present reality. But the other extreme is true, too. Life expectancy has doubled in the past century to a high of 72 years old. Two centuries ago, 8 in 10 people lived in extreme poverty. Today, it's fewer than 1 in 10. That's amazing. War, disease, and natural disasters claim fewer lives than any point in history. In 1800, we talked about this last week, nearly half of all children died before the age of 5. Today, it's less than 4%. Two centuries ago, 88% of the world's population was illiterate. They couldn't read. Now it's only 10%. It's amazing. We can get fresh food delivered to our houses. Technology cuts down on work and house chores. We live in utopia. Hashtag blessed. At the core of humanity is this tension between two narratives. And it's not a 21st century tension, it's a human tension. And I wonder which narrative you're walking in with today. Is your life a mess? Some of us can put on a smile and we can dress up, but we might be shoving down anxiety, depression, desperation. Christianity in general can sometimes pretend that everything is awesome, but the reality is we live in suffering. This is a part of the human condition. But Easter is a reminder that there's more to the narrative. So we're going to look at some ancient words from the Apostle Paul that gives language to this tension. So we're in Romans chapter 8, verse 18. Apostle Paul says, I believe that the present suffering is nothing compared to the coming glory going to be revealed to us. The whole creation waits breathless with anticipation for the revelation of God's sons and daughters. Creation was subjected to frustration not by its own choice. It was the choice of the one who subjected it. But in the hope that the creation itself will be set free from slavery to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of God's children. We know that the whole creation, I want to say this word out loud together, the whole creation is groaning together and suffering labor pains up until now. And it's not only the creation, we ourselves who have the Spirit as the first crop of the harvest also groan inside. The Apostle Paul gives us a few images here to break down. And the first is, according to him, he agrees that the world is full of suffering and frustration. And this word, groaning. Now, groaning is something you only understand if you have had deep pain. Groaning is something we do when we don't have the words to express. Now, after the Civil War, there was a new kind of music emerging in the South. And the singers of this music were descendants of slaves, and elements can be traced back to African origins, and it was called the blues. And blues referred to blue or bent notes used to express emotion. The music was less about the lyrics and more about embodying sadness and pain. Many of the original blues songs express the suffering of slavery and injustice and endless toil. There's an old blues song that's called Groaning the Blues. It was written in the early 1900s, and it was redone by Eric Clapton. So real quick, I want us to watch a clip of this, and this is music you have to feel, not just listen to. So let's watch this together.
My heart gets so heavy.
Lyrics here are simply, my heart gets so heavy, Lord, I shakes down in my bones. Can you relate to that? The feeling of a heavy, heavy heart. Is there something relationally, emotionally, spiritually that you're carrying this season? Maybe not today, sometime in the past. And if not now, you will one day, because this is the human condition. But Paul gives us our first bit of good news to those of us with heavy hearts. He says our God is not a God who watches the suffering from a distance with his hands off. He's not the one orchestrating the pain. He's a God who groans with us. He's the God of the blues. Amen? Okay, we'll work on that. Eugene Peterson says it in Romans 8, verse 26, he says, God's Spirit is right alongside helping us along. If we don't know how or what to pray, it doesn't matter. He does our praying in and for us, making prayer out of wordless sighs, our aching groans. He knows us far better than we know ourselves, knows our pregnant condition, keeps us present before God. The Spirit groans with us. When we don't know what to say, don't know what to pray, we can allow the Spirit to groan and grieve with us, and we can be promised that God hears it. Because remember, the story of Easter begins with pain and suffering, not just for us, but for Jesus. The prophets say he was a man of sorrows, familiar with suffering. This is a God who enters the pain and groans with us because he gets it. Isn't this amazing? I'm so glad Jesus is a God who knows a heavy heart, who knows how to sing the blues. Because of this, our faith is not a pretending faith. One of our values at Highway is authenticity. And it's not just sound like cool and relevant. It's because our faith is an authentic faith. Sometimes we don't feel hashtag blessed. We feel the blues. So when our friends or the world around us hurts or moans, we don't give them a pithy or cliche statement. We weep with those who weep. We groan with them. But why do we groan? It's because deep within us, we know the truth that this is not how it's supposed to be. You feel this, right? A few years ago, I did something I never thought I would do. And it's something I'd sort of like to keep between us. So don't tell anyone. I started using an anti-aging wrinkle cream on my face. Now, don't think too much of this. I didn't get anything fancy. I just bought some at Trader Joe's. By the way, this entire worship service is brought to you by Trader Joe's. Only place you can buy anti-aging wrinkle cream and everything but the bagel seasoning at the same place. I never fathomed using something like this, but I go to look in the mirror now, and there are wrinkles in places where there used to be smooth skin. And it just doesn't seem right. It's a reminder that my body is actively in decay. When we hear about senseless violence, natural disasters, when we hear about a young kid getting cancer, our soul screams, this is not right. I want to be clear this morning, it's because it's not right. This is not the way things were meant to be. In this passage, Paul talks about not just people groaning, but creation groaning. He's referring back to the beginning in Genesis. In the beginning, there was a garden. This was the design. Everything was whole. There was shalom with humans and God, but also creation, the earth. We get a picture of humans walking in this garden with full unity. Last summer, we were camping in Big Sur, and I reached down into an innocent-looking bush to grab my son's baseball. And five days later, I realized I had been attacked by the bush. I broke out in this horrible rash on both arms and legs. It looked like I had leprosy. Creation is brutal. Blood-sucking mosquitoes, thorns and thistles, the vicious cold waves of the Pacific Ocean. But the original design looked different. There was unity and wholeness. But the problem was humans were tricked by the evil one who sought to cause a disunity, who tried to create brokenness, and now poison oak plants try to kill us. There was a curse on humans, but also all of creation. And for that reason, Paul uses poetic language to say the whole creation, the ocean, the redwoods, the earth is groaning for redemption. Get us back. Get us back to shalom. Get us back to wholeness. It longs and it yearns in eager expectation for unity again. And this is the key to Easter, this word expectation. Can we all say that word together? Expectation. It is pain, yes, but it's pain with expectation. Paul perfectly illustrates this with the image of labor and childbirth. Okay, We have three kids, so I've spent a lot of time in labor and delivery rooms. And half of you are going to hate me here, including my wife. But I got to be honest, it's sort of fun. Hear me out. You get to spend a couple of nights in a room with your spouse. It's sort of like a hotel. You get room service. Most of the time, I just read books and watch TV. Really, my main role was walking to the kitchen to get more ice chips, and it was walking these halls that made me remember that this was no Ritz-Carlton, because the halls sounded like a horror movie, yelling and screaming, weeping and gnashing of teeth. And I am joking, but I can't imagine how hard and painful it is to give birth. And some of you are like, yeah, you definitely can't. The suffering, the labor, and of course, the groaning. But even in the pain, there is an expectation, right? It's the hope of new life, new creation. The labor and pregnancy doesn't last forever. There's an expectation of new life. And that's where the resurrection comes in. Paul is referencing this common Jewish belief that time could be split into two periods, the present age and the age to come. The present age started in Genesis 3 and is filled with suffering and decay, but eventually at the end of history, Yahweh would intervene, everyone would be resurrected, and there would be the age to come. But the resurrection disrupted this narrative because it came in the middle of history. And it wasn't everyone, it was one person who was resurrected. And so it's almost like Jesus created a portal from the age to come and now. Through his death and resurrection, he has defeated the curse and he has made a way to this kingdom. He's brought hope into a world of suffering. J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of The Lord of the Rings, created a word that he calls eucatastrophe. It's the opposite of a catastrophe. He says this, a eucatastrophe is a massive turn in fortune from a seemingly unconquerable situation to an unforeseen victory. It's a sudden glimpse of truth, your whole nature chained in. The chain of death feels a sudden relief. And then he goes on to say the resurrection was the greatest eucatastrophe possible. We see a glimpse of a new reality where death does not have the last word and suffering will come to an end. But we know it's not completely here yet, right? We are in the now and not yet. And this is where we started our discussion. We live in the tension. We can access this portal. We can live in his kingdom here and now, but not fully yet. So we experience the pain of childbirth, awaiting the new life. So where does this leave us? I want to talk a little more about gardens. So my name, again, if we never met, my name is Adam, just like the first human in the garden. And the name Adam comes from the Hebrew word Adama, which means from the dirt, from the earth. So during the pandemic, I decided to embrace this part of me, and I became a gardener. And land is a little hard to come by in the valley, so I did the next best thing, and I built a raised garden bed. And I felt deep fulfillment as I pushed seeds into the dirt, feeling connected to the soil and creation. I was a gardener, and I waited my crops with eager expectation. And you know what happened next, right? The next day, I walked outside, eager to see the growth, only to see dirt. Day after day, seemingly nothing was happening. And of course, this is what happens with seeds. Seeds are tiny fragments of abundance that one day can grow into massive vegetation or trees, but it takes time and patience. In the book of John, after the resurrection, Mary Magdalene sees the risen Jesus, but she didn't recognize him. Instead, she thinks he is the gardener. And this is an intentional image by John connecting the beginning with the new creation. God was a gardener in Eden, and now Jesus is the gardener in a garden right where he was buried like a seed. It's beautiful. And when we accept and we trust and we follow Jesus, the gardener plants a seed in us. The Holy Spirit is a seed. Paul says it's the first fruit of the harvest. It's small, it's slow, but the seed is a promise of new creation, of flourishing and abundance. It's a seed of hope. Again, he says this in Romans 8, we were saved in hope. If we see what we hope for, that isn't hope. Who hopes for what they already see? But if we hope for what we don't see, we wait for it with patience. We carry the seed of hope in us as we live between two narratives of suffering and utopia. We wait in patience, experiencing labor pains, but knowing new life is being birthed. We groan, but we groan in hope. We sing the blues, but we sing in hope. There's a children's book called Garden of Hope. And sometimes, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes kids' books seem to do a better job at presenting deep truths, even more than adult books. At the beginning, we realize something terrible has happened. Young Maya's mom has died. And we read this page 2. Things had changed since mom had been gone. This is obviously someone that's not from America, because that's not the right mom. Sorry. The house was untidy. Maya, Dad, and Pip were a bit of a mess, and the garden had become wild and overgrown. So at the beginning, we realize that they are a mess, and we realize they are in the same world that we live in, a garden not of shalom, but of pain and chaos. And I wonder how many of you can relate to being a bit of a mess. Bit of a mess. A few pages later, her dad tells her this. She was a little anxious. So he says, you know, your mom used to worry about things too, don't you, Maya? Said Dad. Whenever she felt upset, she would go outside, plant some seeds, and wait for them to grow into something new and beautiful. Your mom knew that by the time the seeds had grown, those worries would have faded away. She called them her seeds of hope. So Maya begins to plant some seeds. She first plants a sunflower, her mom's favorite flower, and she closes her eyes and she drops the seed in the hole and she hopes. She hopes. When her and her dad feel angry or anxious, they plant and nourish the seeds, and over time, flowers and plants begin to bloom. And then at the end of the book, when a garden has grown, we read this. Things had changed since mom had been gone. The house was still untidy. Maya, Dad, and Pip were still rather a mess. But something felt different. For the first time in a long while, there was hope. Dad and Maya looked out at their beautiful garden, and they shared a smile. Do you see it? This is us. This is our reality. Things are still untidy. Our lives are a bit of a mess. But because of the resurrection, something feels different. There's hope. And it comes down to this. We have a choice. There's two ways of viewing our present reality. We can choose cynicism, bitterness, anger. And honestly, it's easier to be cynical about the world, about the state of the church, about others. We can view life as ultimately a cold, dark, random place, just logic and particles and death and taxes. Or we can choose to believe in the mystery and the wonder and the magic of the resurrection that says death has been defeated and does not belong anymore. a portal has been opened, a seed of hope planted. We can believe that every blooming flower, every ray of sunshine is a reminder that God's good world is here. And we'll continue for eternity. And one day, there'll be a full reunion. The groaning will end. And we won't sing the blues. We will sing in celebration.